Enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska Seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com. I'm HRN's Communication Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. We're exploring the future of eating animals, and we're going beyond typical meat sources.
If you look at the length of human history, we've been eating insects a lot longer than we haven't been in the United States and Western Europe.
We're looking at unusual ways to purchase meat.
People are like, really? Why would I want to buy that out of a machine?
And we introduce you to Frank Reese, a poultry farmer whose traditional farming methods are featured in a new documentary.
I'm a fourth generation farmer in Kansas, and I focus basically all on standard bred poultry and have my whole life.
He's kind of the last one standing with these rarefied breeds that are so important for if we're going to eat chicken and turkey into the future. He's essential. He's a national treasure.
Listen to Meat and Three this week to better understand the history and the future of meat. Available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Allie Kane. Welcome to In the Sauce, a new podcast about building food brands. We live in a culture that romanticizes entrepreneurship and the hustle. But what I really want to hear are the stories from the trek uphill. I want the stories about the bruises and the scrapes we all get as we build our businesses. And I want to hear about the roads that led to nowhere and the lessons learned along the way. And I want advice in real time. This is the story of Haven's Kitchen Sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand, because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Courtney Becerro from Fresh Direct and Charlotte Meyer from Food Kick. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
I'm super excited to have them on because our relationship with these guys has been pretty dreamy since day one. For some background, Fresh Direct was the first retailer that chose to sell our sauces and is now selling about 800 pouches a week-ish.
Yep.
Which is a lot more sauce than we thought we'd be selling 7 months into this process. And I wanted them on the show so they can help explain what makes a great brand, what they're looking for in brands, what they think about the future of grocery, and I guess basically just to get to know you a little more too, because, you know, it's fun. So I guess my first question for both of you is, did you know you wanted to be buyers for a grocery company when you were little? Was that a dream?
I'll start.
Charlotte.
This is Charlotte. I did not know that I wanted to be a buyer for a grocery company when I was little. I didn't know that that was even a thing that a person could do until much, much later in life. I got into this because I went to graduate school in Italy for a year, actually. And as part of that grad school program, one of the things we did is visit producers and go on these study trips where we would sort of immerse ourselves in the food culture of a place a week-long
period.
Was
it a food program?
Yeah.
Right.
It's called the University of Gastronomic Sciences.
Sure.
Yeah. but sort of over the course of that program, I realized that the thing that I love is like the product and the producers and the stories behind it. And I really wanted to get people to understand why certain products are more expensive and what like a high quality product is and what it means. So I sort of discovered that like in retail, there is this role. You can be the person who decides which products get into the marketplace and get customers to support those people that are making these amazing things. And
did you go straight from that to Food Kick or?
No, I worked for a specialty brick and mortar store based down in North Carolina.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, called Southern Season. So I was there for a couple of years and then moved up here to work for Food Kick.
That's so cool. What about you, Courtney? Did you know that about Charlotte?
I did not.
See?
I did not.
We've already learned. Be done.
I'm fascinated by that University of
Gastronomic Sciences.
It's incredible. I knew that, you know, being a food buyer was a thing. My aunt was a buyer in fashion for many years. Right. So I knew about it, but wasn't necessarily something that like I ever dreamed of being.
Right.
until I started working for my father's bread distribution company here in New York. And I did a lot of like operations and sales and customer service, everything you could imagine. I was working for him for a few years and fell in love with the food industry and just the family-oriented feeling that surrounds everybody in the industry. It's like you're feeding people, and ultimately, it's a small community. You know that. So I fell in love with the industry itself, and I knew about Fresh Direct actually for since they first started. I'm from New York, so everybody knew about it.
Right.
And I had actually applied for a job, but didn't have the e-commerce experience that they were looking for. So you know, I went back into the workforce. I worked for an e-com company in merchandising. And then when another role opened up, I applied for, you know, the merchandising role at Fresh Direct as a buyer. So and that's how I ended up there.
Well, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting when we were at the Fancy Food Show like a year ago, you know, Fresh Direct was like the first retailer, I guess, that was like, we want this. We definitely want this. But there was definitely a discussion of which buyer gets it. And we didn't even know what that meant. So, I mean, if you're not a grocery person or you haven't had exposure to this world, you know, every department of the grocery store, just for those of you out here who are interested in this, has a different buyer or a different team of buyers. Yeah. And the meat people don't necessarily talk to the produce people, and the produce people don't necessarily talk to the dairy people. And we were originally in dairy.
Yeah.
Because we're refrigerated. And one of the challenges of this particular product is that there's no what they call category for it, really. People didn't know where to put it. You know, it could go in produce, it could go in specialty, it could go in dairy.
Yeah.
It eventually got switched over to you, Courtney, in sauce, because are we your only refrigerated product in your kind?
Yeah. Yes. So, exactly what you're saying. There was like condiments, for example, was broken up at like refrigerated and shelf stable.
Right.
I did all of shelf stable condiments and the refrigerated was under a different buyer, which could be confusing because you think condiments, you know.
Well, for us, it was just challenging because even and Fresh Direct was easier. I mean, online with both of you guys was easier than with a brick and mortar store because there's no physical location where you have to make room for it on an actual shelf. So even though it was a little challenging at the beginning because you would have to click dairy, sauce, and then us, which, you know, was no one was doing that, right?
Yeah.
So we had to get people to go directly to it.
Yeah.
But does Food Kick operates a little differently than Fresh Direct?
We're just smaller in general. So we have a smaller merchandising team, so I manage both the pantry categories and the dairy category.
Right.
So for us, it was, you know, it's still the same buyer.
So you get to like decide everything that goes on Food Kick.
Everything that's not produce, meat, seafood, alcohol.
Wow.
Prepared foods.
So how many samples a day do you get?
A lot.
Yeah.
There's usually a mountain of boxes next to my desk.
Yes.
And people just get your name and send you stuff.
Pretty much. Yeah.
We're not that hard to find.
No.
No.
The internet exists.
Yeah. And even if they don't have our name, they'll send it to like, condiments buyer or like Food Kick buyer or whatever.
Right. And so how did Food Kick come out? Like what happened that Food Kick kind of got birthed by Fresh Direct? And what would you say is the main sort of difference?
Yeah. So Food Kick was born out of a realization on the Fresh Direct side, I would like five or six years ago now, that there were a certain segment of customers that were lapsing with Fresh Direct because Fresh Direct wasn't necessarily convenient for them for like the way that they live their lifestyle. So there are a lot of customers who maybe aren't good at planning or who don't want to plan, so they can't plan to be home, you know, tomorrow or the next day for a 2-hour period of time to wait for their order.
Right.
So Fresh Direct identified, you know, there's this whole customer base for whom an on-demand delivery service is really necessary.
Like me yesterday. Did you see my order yesterday or you
I
don't
didn't.
Get to see
Unfortunately, we don't just get to watch orders go out.
Man.
I think it's really fun.
I want to be like, hey.
Yeah. Hi. I know I could have put a note in there.
Right.
But yeah, so they recognized, again, like this need for an on-demand service and as a sort of complement to the Fresh Direct core business. So that's really where Foodkick came from.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, and have you seen it just like catch on and catch on and catch on?
Yeah, it's been really fun. I mean, I joined Foodkick a month after we launched. So I've been there really since the beginning and we've just grown like crazy since then. So it's been
that's
fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then Courtney, you buy all
grocery pantry.
Mm-hmm.
Pantry.
So what isn't grocery pantry? Because I think of everything. As
right.
Grocery.
Yeah. It's a little confusing. But basically, everything in the grocery aisles that isn't beverages, HBA, baby, like health and beauty.
Okay.
Baby, pet, and snacks.
Got it. So that's huge.
Yeah. They're pretty big categories.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of categories. They're pretty small right now, but you know, we're growing them as we continue to scale the business. So.
And you guys are in the process of a move.
Yes.
Yes.
And that move is going to give you broader reach north or...
Yes, so we're moving into our brand new facility in the Bronx, and it's maybe I don't know how much bigger it is than our current facility, but it's
a lot
bigger. Right. Yeah, and we're able to really expand our assortment into categories and brands that we just didn't have the space for.
Right,
you know, for years, we've always been able to distinguish ourselves more on the fresh side, and our produce and our meat, our seafood is top of the line, phenomenal. Yep. And that's where we've really stood out for many years.
Yeah,
and now
for sure.
On the grocery side, we're making sure that we're taking advantage of all of this new space we have.
Right.
And we're going into you know, segments of our assortment that we weren't able to before. And that'll allow us to also, you know, scale into different cities and states on the East Coast. So we're really, really excited.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, for us, it's just been a dream. You know, as a small brand, you know, we haven't had to just had like, you know, hire all these people to stand, you know, demos and merchandising and, you know, try some sauce and hear some sauce. Like the, you know, so much of our brand is built on social media. And for us, you know, you see, I'm like a swipe up to buy fanatic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for a brand like ours that's fresh, that can't do direct to consumer because it's just too expensive to do refrigerated direct to consumer, it just makes a ton of sense to have an e-tailer that you can connect to that will, you know, that will fulfill the order for you. So before we take the break, I want to kind of go back a little bit into, you know, you could be a buyer for a whole host of things, right? And you're in food. And I just kind of want to hear a little bit about what that means to you. I mean, clearly you, Charlotte, chose food as a path.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly you were thinking about sustainability and you were thinking about production. And, but what was the thing when you, like, when did you start connecting with food? Like at what point in your lives and how did it speak to you?
I think for me, this is Courtney. I think for me, a lot of it's cultural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from a very large Hispanic family where food is how the family connects.
Right.
You know, every holiday, every birthday, everybody was just getting together and it was who's making pasteles in the kitchen, you know, who's, I don't know, boiling the rice and whatnot. And everybody had something to do in the kitchen. And as I got older and I started working for my father's company, I realized like how much I wanted to be part of the industry and how I really wanted to impact it as much as I could in a positive way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Sounds- yeah. I think for me, I mean, sort of a similar thing. I just always grew up, you know, like kind of around the family table and dinner time was like of paramount importance in my family. We were all home and present and that's when we talked and there was, you know, no phones, no TV, all that good stuff. But I always loved food. I always loved to eat. I got really into baking. That was like my first kind of foray into the kitchen. And I used to bake a lot in school and college as like a de-stressor. So
What do they call that? Procrastibaking?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I was a big procrastibaker. But yeah, I don't know. I just loved food and I didn't really think that I could be in food as a career until I sort of discovered this graduate school program, which I did sort of back into through an interest in sustainability and the environment. And just kind of realized that it all does come back to food and like the production systems. And
so interesting. I feel like, you know, the reason why I got into this, I mean, I couldn't have done anything else really in my life other than this. Mm-hmm. I mean, this particular thing is just a weird offshoot of food, period. But I do find that, like, you know, you get into, you know, you're in a cab or you're, you know, online somewhere, or, and no matter what is going on around you, if you're talking about like the lamb chops you made the other night, the guy or the lady or the person three people away will be like, did you try that with, you know, some horseradish? Like, people just, it's such a connector. Yeah. And I feel like if you're not a food person, you're almost sort of like, what?
Yeah.
You know, confused by it. I'm sure that there are architecture people, and I know that there are art people,
you know,
and I'm sure there are fashion people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I just find that food people are the best people.
Well, it's like the most global connector, right? Yeah. Like, everyone needs it. Yeah. And
I read an article the other day, I don't know if you saw it in the journal, about basically the author was saying that people just don't cook from home anymore. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's just a dead craft. And I mean, the truth is there's a lot of research actually to the contrary. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of research that millennials actually are cooking much more. Men are cooking much more. Maybe they're cooking a little differently than what we think of as traditional cooking. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we come in with this sort of semi-homemade, you know, even if it's a rotisserie chicken and, you know, pre-cleaned salad, you're still cooking dinner. You know, you're still making something for your family. You're not ordering it in or like putting things from the salad bar into a container. But do you guys find, I mean, just judging from the carts and the people that are shopping and your demographics, like, are you finding that people are cooking?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think people still cook. I think you're right. The way that people cook has changed. And I think that's why products like yours do so well. It's really, it's a convenience thing. And it's a way for people to make a really delicious meal and have it ready quickly. And, you know, you have this like amazing pre-made sauce that's super healthy, clean ingredients. It's almost like a meal solution for a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. People are obviously still cooking. If not, I don't think we would be in business as a company. And I think particularly our customers, you know, are very aware of what they're buying. They want to make sure that they're getting the best quality food. If they didn't care about quality, then they probably wouldn't order from us.
Right.
Obviously, there's a convenience factor to it. But, you know, obviously, it's, people are cooking in a different way, which is why, you know, we're making sure that we carry brands like Haven's Kitchen to make sure that we're catering to these customers who cook at different levels.
Right.
Because, you know, we have like the foodies that will cook from scratch and they're in the kitchen for an hour and a half and they don't want a packaged chimichurri sauce. They want to make it themselves. But then you have people like, you know, me, I'm by myself and I like to cook almost every night. Right. You guys have enhanced the quality of my life. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Courtney.
Last night, so nice. I made some pork meatballs from an Insta story thing that you had posted with the romesco.
With the romesco. Well, that was what I ordered from Food Kick.
Oh,
yesterday,
nice.
I was it was the Pride Parade, and I couldn't really leave my house because I'm like in the middle of it, and there was no going more than a few blocks. Mm-hmm. And so I ordered Food Kick, and I ordered Pat LaFrieda turkey. And our romesco, which was like a kind of like surreal experience, ordering
your own product to be delivered to your door.
I did a little story of myself taking the romesco out of the Food Kick bag, and then I looked kind of too dorky to post it. So I'll show it to you guys later.
Cool.
Yeah, and I just simmered them with tomato sauce, and I mixed the romesco in with the burgers. Mm-hmm. Anywho,
it was phenomenal. Well, I made little meatballs. It was so good.
Thank you. All right. On that note, we're going to take a little break and then we're going to come back and talk all about what you're looking for in brands and all that fun, juicy stuff.
Yay.
Cool.
take a sip from your chalice chest and I bow my head to you.
Think about what it takes to swim a coastline longer than the entire eastern seaboard and leap tall waterfalls in a single bound. What does it take to survive 200 feet deep in icy salt water? What would you be made of? Wild Alaska seafood is made of tight muscle mass, long chain omega-3s, and incredible micronutrients. It matters where your food comes from. Experience the flavor of the fittest in every bite and enjoy food the way nature intended. Alaska seafood, wild, natural, and sustainable. Ask for Alaska on the menu, grocery store, or smart device. For more information, visit wildalaskaseafood.com.
Hi, I'm back with Courtney and Charlotte, our buyers from Fresh Direct and Food Kick, and I want to get back to the samples question. First of all, you know, I think it's so bold. I mean, I know that it's what people do, but it wouldn't occur to me to send a sample to someone who hadn't asked for one. And mm-hmm. I know that that's a thing.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. I'm not in any way like disparaging the thousands of people that have done it. And it's probably like good business, but I'm wondering sort of, you know, if you can walk me through your sort of sorting process. So you get these things and they're all on your desk. And then I'm sure there's rounds, I would imagine, of, okay, that's a no, because we have mm-hmm. too much of this. Or, and then how does it, like, is there a rubric for what you're looking for? Is it the same for both of you? Is it a little different? Maybe.
I think it's different for every buyer.
Yeah.
I think Charlotte and I, we both deal with refrigerated and non-refrigerated. So obviously the refrigerated stuff we need to tackle first.
Right.
It really depends on like what category I'm reviewing at the time, what assortment gaps we have.
What's an assortment gap?
So, like any items, within like a particular category that we're missing, that we don't have, whether it's a flavor or a size or a package type.
And do you evaluate that? So you're looking at all of that before you are even thinking about the products. Like you're aware of not only your categories, but wouldn't it be great if there was a blah, blah that was this size and was turmeric flavored?
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you might find one.
Yeah.
Do you actively seek them out or does it usually come to you?
A lot of times I'll seek out brands. You know, Instagram and social media has become an instrumental part of how I find brands.
Right.
So a lot of times, like I'll reach out to a particular brand and I'll ask them for samples
right. When
I know what I'm looking for.
Right.
And then there are times where samples kind of just fall into our laps and we're like, oh, this is cool. You know, Charlotte, mm-hmm. have you seen this cool, I don't know, baking mix or quinoa or, you know, cooking sauce?
Right.
And, you know, we'll share and whatnot. So I don't know what Charlotte's personal experience is.
Yeah. I think managing samples is like a beast. Right. So many.
Yeah.
In terms of like a weaning winnowing process.
Yeah.
I mean, I focus first on samples that come in areas that I'm like actively working on. So even if a product is really cool, but it's not necessarily an area that I think is an opportunity for us to expand, it probably doesn't make sense to move forward.
Right.
So that's sort of the first step. And then of course we taste everything quality of taste is like the most important thing that we're looking for, right?
Sure.
We want to deliver our customers amazing products. And then, you know, we look at things like packaging. Is this going to pop off the website? Pricing, does it make sense to a customer? I mean, I would say there is a rubric that's like internal, it's like internalized.
Yeah.
So if you had to sort of say like what you're looking for specifically, mm-hmm. you're looking for something that fills a gap in what you already offer. You're looking for
yes, but also, I mean, if like I would say, so I just did a review of the ice cream category, which is a really fun category to review.
Can you guys also explain, sorry to interrupt you, but can you explain the review process? Because we didn't know about that either. Like every store does their different reviews of different categories at different times. Mm-hmm. And like what we're learning is that I don't even know about your review, but I know like our review at Whole Foods, there's like a process before mm-hmm. the review, and we have to sort of be aware that the review is happening mm-hmm. and you have to know when your category is getting reviewed, and then the review sort of determines, I guess, if they're keeping you or if they're maybe expanding you to different regions and things like that. But I didn't even know what that was until about a month ago. So is it similar with you guys? Do you do, or is that the review process for you?
So we'll look at all of our categories and
how many are there?
Hundreds.
Really? I know that I have 92 subcategories.
Yeah.
I found out.
Wow.
Or I figured it out the other day.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess
it's a lot.
It's like a grocery store. But.
So yeah, we'll look at, strategically at which categories we need to focus on.
Right.
You know, a lot of times it's from, you know, a high level perspective of, you know, impact on revenue, you know, where the most opportunities for growth are. And then once we dive into the category, you know, there's the process of doing all of the research and figuring out the brands that we should be carrying that we don't carry.
Right.
Like what's trending right now, like what's super hip.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That we need to make sure that, you know, we're not only keeping up with, but that we're also ahead of the trend.
Right.
And how do we get ahead of that trend?
Well, you're ahead on this trend. Ladies, let me
know. Yeah, you know it.
Yeah, I think someone explained to me, explained it to me once as top down versus bottom up. And so some of it is like a review is like a deep dive into a category. And so we look a lot at our own data and what's working for us and which brands and sort of where we're seeing growth. And we look to fuel those fires. But then and so that is what I would call like top down merchandising. But mm-hmm. then there's also bottom up, which is just like, I found a really great product and I'm going to bring it in and launch it and try it. And I think we do both things.
Yeah. Beautifully said.
Oh, no, that's very cool. Is there like a closet for the...
there is a closet.
Yes, there is a sample
and people
room
can just like go eat if they're bored or...
You're not supposed to take samples that aren't yours.
Yes, there is.
There's an etiquette to the sample
there's
closet.
There's a sample closet etiquette.
Yes.
Got it. You know, so it's not like in the movies of like Devil Wears Prada where all the clothes is in the... and anyone can just go take a pair of Manolos. Like,
yeah,
you
no.
can't just take...
That's a sample room like faux pas.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you will get some nasty looks.
Yeah.
And even the samples that you're not... Like, let's say you've decided not to carry something. Mm-hmm. Is that sample then like anyone can take home or...
Yeah. So usually if we've decided against something, we'll put it out in like the kitchen or a shared space and people know there's like a certain table. People know they can take anything.
The Bermuda Triangle of samples.
Yeah.
Like once you have to be careful because if you put, let's say, your lunch there for like a hot second.
It's gone.
Yeah. People will think it's up for grabs and you turn around.
So
it's
funny.
Gone. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, like, you know, for me, I'll get samples. I'll look at the brand. I'll look at the flavors and whatnot. I'll try them. But a lot of times we're getting like 2, 3, 4 units of the same product.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's no need for me to have that many.
Right. So they go into the Bermuda Triangle.
They'll go into the,
and then one goes into the sample closet.
Yeah, sample. Yeah, we'll put it away depending on, you know, if we want other people to try it or whatnot.
And is there like an organized, is there like sample trying on Fridays at 8? Like, or is it kind of on a flow? Like, is there a specific time when you're like, we're trying these samples and we're going to talk about these samples? Or is it just kind of like, oh, I like this. What do you think? Should we make it work?
I think there are moments where it's more formalized.
You guys are giving like a real behind the scenes. I mean, I'm so interested. I might be like one of three people, but I do think it's really interesting. Like mm-hmm. no one knows this.
Yeah.
People think that, you know, you make a product and if it's good, you put it in the grocery store, and if it's good, people buy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like that's what you think that the whole thing is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you find out that actually there's like a gazillion things in between mm-hmm. you make a, first of all, you make a product as if that's like
just easy,
just an easy thing to do. That's why we had the operations guru on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But you know, there's this massive gap between making a product, having it ready to go, and then actually having it out there for people to buy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it kind of, it's very confusing. It, once you start to learn a little bit about it, you know, so.
Yeah, it definitely a lot goes on behind the scenes. And I think that we're lucky enough at Fresh Direct and having the Food Kick team so close, like within the same office space, you know, being able to try different things and get each other's opinions.
Right.
You know, I manage, you know, Grocery Pantry, but, you know, there are some things that I don't necessarily like taste-wise.
Right.
So my opinion on how it tastes may not be the best one. And
right.
that's where, you know, it's my responsibility as a buyer, you know, to make the best decision for the category. And how do I do that? And so I seek feedback from my colleagues who I trust, you know, and, right. and they're going to give me their honest feedback on mm-hmm. texture and taste and whatnot. And
right.
So we're lucky, I think, to be in that kind of environment where just everybody is just so obsessed with food.
I think a really fun sitcom would be a buyer who has awful taste. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where they're like, this is delicious. And like everyone else is like, what?
Yeah.
Or like no palate at all.
Yeah.
And like no understanding of anything.
Yeah.
You know, like I love this.
I wouldn't want to shop at that store.
No, yeah. It would just be kind of a funny,
yeah.
you know, premise of a show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now let's say a sample works and the pricing works and it's going to pop and mm-hmm. you're excited. And what are some red flags when you start working with a company, you know, a vendor that just like, when does your like, whoop, go up a little bit? And then what are the things that you're really looking for that you love and you don't have to like, we don't have to talk about Haven City. what are the things that you really love about when you're working with a company, and like what are your favorite types of companies to work with? So those are mm-hmm. three questions. So
it's a lot.
I know. Yeah. I'll break it back. I'll go back. I'll rewind. But what are the red flags? Have you ever had to say like, sorry, we can't work with you anymore?
Yeah, I mean, we've had moments, you know, situations where we've had to cut ties, unfortunately, and it's never a pleasant conversation you want
right.
to have.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it usually just based on sales?
There could be a variety of reasons,
right.
You know, from sales to, you know, moral standing.
right. Yeah,
behavior.
Yeah, behaviors, exactly, or mm-hmm. like unfortunate bad publicity.
Right.
I know red flags for me, like sketchy AF ingredients.
Right.
Especially for like a newer, younger brand, if you have like a ton of, like if your ingredient label is just full of stuff.
Yeah.
It's, my question is always, why? You know,
well, I think yeah. also what's getting confusing is, I don't know if you saw my Instagram post this morning, but it's that it, you know, by Marie Andrew, she's like the
yeah.
illustrator. So she
I
did like a decades thing of like food things that were popular in the 80s, the 90s, the aughts, as they call them, mm-hmm. the tens or whatever. And then today, and it, you know, it was like Gruyere mac and cheese and cocktails and like,
oh,
funky
yeah, the
glasses.
Style.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then for 2018, it was charcoal, I think matcha. Mm-hmm.
Turmeric,
and,
maybe?
Or maybe turmeric yeah. and oat milk.
Yeah.
I mean, and.
Oh, oat milk is huge.
I mean,
so big.
I know.
Yeah.
And it, but charcoal is mm-hmm. not actually an ingredient in food. Like, I think part of your...
Now it is.
Well, right. I mean, and that's, I think that's partly what's confusing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want a clean ingredient label and you want to be eating food, but now there's this whole, like, wellness umbrella,
mm-hmm.
which considers things that aren't actually... The FDA probably doesn't even know what the heck to do with. And by the time it even gets to them, it's been years on the market. So there
yeah.
are these
yeah.
herbs and adaptogenics and things like that, that are they food? Like, mm-hmm. I guess to some extent, but you know,
yeah.
Yeah.
The ingredient labels, I guess my point is they might not be filled with as many additives and preservatives
mm-hmm.
and they might be sort of cleaner that way,
mm-hmm.
but they're definitely getting more complicated.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to what I mentioned earlier. When we're reviewing the assortment and we're looking at, you know, samples and products, is what is trending right now? You know, right. And we had, as a team at Fresh Direct, we had a, you know, we have meetings on, you know, what's trending, like what's going on in the market that we need to be aware of.
Right.
You know,
charcoal.
And charcoal actually came up, you know.
I don't get it. I had charcoal ice cream the other day and all my teeth were like gray. And my kids were like, you should go look. And I'm like, what?
You know, like with like the big. Have you ever brushed your teeth with a charcoal toothpaste?
No.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Didn't we do that together?
We did it together.
At
a trade show.
Yes.
I don't. I mean, I'm sure there's just something I'm missing, but I mean, we're just so much about like real food and eating real food. But so other red flags, has there ever been a company you're just like, ugh, I can't deal with them. Like they're just awful to deal with.
I think this is sort of the inverse of my answer to the next question,
right.
But it's
what
like
you're looking for.
What I'm looking for are people that are really passionate and really believe in the product. And so when I don't necessarily get a sense for that passion, to me, that's a red flag.
For sure.
Because this is a hard business. So if you don't have the passion to fuel you, then
I'm not
sure if there's much, you know, staying power.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, that's one thing we were talking about, just the expression labor of love, you know, I mean, it's gotta be more than just like love. There's got to be something else because it's really hard. I mean, I thought brick and mortar was hard, but this is really hard.
Yeah.
And you're going into people's homes, you know, like it's a big responsibility also.
Yeah.
I think another thing that I look for is just what the overall experience is. So I like to take a lot of my samples home and cook with them at home.
Right.
Because it's one thing to cook in the office and share it and get people's opinion. It's another thing to actually, you know, take the product out of the bag, open it up in my kitchen and mix it and feel it like how the customer would feel.
Yeah.
So for me, if it doesn't feel comfortable, like I think about that a little bit more. And I don't know, maybe this is just a side note.
Right.
But I really hate when vendors send samples with peanuts, you know, the little foam peanuts.
Oh, yes.
It really breaks my heart. Yeah. And they're also really annoying.
Yeah. It's actually when vendors send samples and it's like a little jar and a humongous box.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. It's the best advice.
No, it's not good.
No,
like the environmental impact of this.
Yes.
Come on.
We care about these things.
Oh my gosh. Note to all vendors out there.
Yeah.
Don't send little jars with peanuts in big boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good thing for people to know. So going back to social media, because Courtney, you were saying that you look at Instagram for ideas of who to carry, and Charlotte, I would imagine that Food Kick is sort of much more ingrained in social media to some extent than Fresh Direct is. For some reason, it just feels like it's more social media-y. I don't know. I feel like, is that the case? I feel like when I order Food Kick, I'm on my phone. When I order Fresh Direct, I'm on my laptop. Mm-hmm. Is that a thought out thing, or is that just how it kind of pans out?
Well, Food Kick did launch mobile first. So we were for about 10 months only a service that you could use through the app. I don't know necessarily how that kind of informs our relationship with social media versus Fresh Directs, but when we definitely, I would say, target a more millennial customer, so I guess that
You
know, lends itself to a social media.
You also look on Instagram for?
I do. Yeah, I love getting into like the Instagram rabbit holes and
you have
finding
to,
cool
it
products.
Takes it's a lot of time.
Yeah,
I've noticed. Yeah. You know, and I actually try not to do it so much because it makes me feel like I'm not doing things well, you know?
Yeah.
Like I feel like my 15-year-old daughter a little bit.
There's definitely a fine line, I would say, with the social media.
Right.
You know, going down that rabbit hole is really great, I think, when you're searching for brands and like a particular hashtag and you want to find something cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, like... half the time I just want to open up Instagram just to scroll through, and then it's a waste of time. And
I got a really good song from your story the other day that I promptly like downloaded or Spotify'd or whatever.
It's such a good
and, like,
song.
Made everyone listen to it. I know. And I guess, can you tell on the back end, like, how much is swipe up to buy? Like, can you trace where people are coming from when they buy things or not really? You just know that they're putting in the order.
That's information that we're not necessarily privy to. It's a different team.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
I can't tell in our metrics, but yeah, the social team may have some insight into that. Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's just such a necessary part of business now for companies nowadays. Like Fresh Direct started before the whole gram, you know, was a thing, and social media was as, you know, influential as it is. But it's just become a natural part of our, you know, our marketing campaigns. And it's like, okay, we're going to do, you know, this push, and we're going to do a homepage banner, we're going to do that, and emails, and oh yeah, an Instagram post. It's just like, it's just already part of the conversation. And I think for any business, regardless of the industry, if you want to reach people, like, it's the best way to do it in a lot of cases, and the most cost effective, especially for smaller businesses.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we would have been able to launch without it.
Your social media also just blows me away. Like, your following is... Yes, your pictures are beautiful.
Thank you.
And your followers are just, like, so loyal and... Yeah.
They are.
Like, every time I think, like, because you direct customers straight to us at Fresh Direct. And I'm telling you, it's, like, probably the best thing you could have done for, you know, your success at Fresh Direct. Because your customers trust you.
Yeah.
You know, if you tell them, like, well, this is where you can buy our products, like...
Totally.
They're going to trust you more than they trust me.
Well, not only that, I mean, thank you. Yeah. But, you know, I think the first purchase order, like, we sent you guys sauce... And then because, like I said, who would know to go dairy, sauce, and then page 6 and find our little pouch? So we had to, I mean, obviously, I was like, here's our sauce and swipe up to buy. And then it sold out in like a day and a half, which we thought was a mistake. And then it happened again. And I was like, I thought... It was like when I was away because it was over Christmas break. So I thought there was like, I wrote to you like, is something wrong with your site or something?
That was actually prior to me managing the category.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah. That was when it was still in dairy.
Yeah.
Right.
And technically it still is in dairy. I'm just now managing condiments within the dairy space.
Okay.
I think I started managing your brand around March, maybe.
So we were already like big time.
But I remember like, you know, having the out of stock issues because like we couldn't forecast, you know, to meet the demand. We didn't expect, and not that we didn't have faith.
No, we
you
didn't
guys
either.
Just exceeded expectations. So
I don't know if you even know the story, but we got out the first PO and we were at the Hot Bread Kitchen incubator. And we were like, awesome. Yay. High fives all around. Cool. Now we can like take a break for like 2 or 3 weeks and like regroup. And then the next PO came in the day, literally a day later.
Yeah. Well, I remember because we had talked about, you know, you'll launch on Fresh Direct and then we'll bring it over to Food Kick because we'll just pull the product over. And you emailed me and you said, we just delivered our first order to Fresh Direct so you guys can go live. And I went in the system and looked at the inventory and I was like, you're already sold out. I can't bring it into Food Kick. I was like,
crazy.
It just flew off the shelves immediately, which is a great problem to have.
So much fun.
Yeah, it really is.
So if you guys, I like asking this question because if you, let's say you were writing a book together. Let's say you were co-authoring a book on merchandising in the grocery world. What are some things that you would like people to know? Like, about either your jobs or what they're eating or just if you could write a book.
We were actually talking about this outside waiting for you. I don't know about Charlotte if she's necessarily on the same page now. But, you know, like the, I don't know if I can say.
You can say anything.
Oh, like Humans of New York, those, like yeah. the book, right? I have the Felines of New York Someone version said on
penis
my.
Penis last week. Oh. So Humans of New York is totally allowed.
Last week, I also heard dick pic.
I did say that. And David, I checked with David and he gave me the thumbs up. So I think, is Humans of New York? Okay? Yeah, that's okay.
But more of like the grocers of New York.
Yeah.
And just like a picture of just like a buyer and just, you know,
yeah.
I hate it when brands include peanuts in their box, in the sample yeah. packages, and just like talk a little bit to their experience as a buyer.
That yeah. would be an amazing book.
Well, because it's like you said, most people don't realize that there's a human being deciding which products go on the shelves and
absolutely
how we talk about them. And yeah. you know,
no. And most yeah. people don't assume that you care all that much.
Right.
I mean, you know, maybe you guys more than, you know, some of the like more traditional older grocers.
Yeah, thank you. We care a lot.
We try.
Yeah. But I do think that there's sort of this demystification. And I think that one of the things that, you know, because I taught this class at NYU about food systems and contemporary society.
You just keep getting like more admirable. Like, you do, what don't you do, Ellie?
Sleep a lot. There are other things that I don't do, but we can talk about that later. But one of the, but this whole experience of building this brand has almost been like a little mini class on the food system because mm-hmm. people want things that are inexpensive, but they also want really high quality. And that's a problem in and of itself, right? That the mm-hmm. consumer has been sort of trained in that way to think that they somehow should be getting really high quality stuff for less, or that somehow they're used to low quality stuff for less, so that they kind of resent the fact when high quality things are more expensive. And I mm-hmm. think that there's been like a little bit of a shift in, you know, the understanding of actual farm labor and you know, how much goes into a quality product. But what people don't really understand is how many steps there are in between making that product and getting it to them on the shelf. So mm-hmm. they don't think about packaging, and they certainly don't think about distribution, which, you know, is a doozy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and they don't think about promotions, and they don't think about, you know, free cases and all mm-hmm. that stuff that little companies have to make up for somehow, unless you want to build a business that's just losing money and then you overcapitalize it, you know,
yeah.
in hopes that someday it sells to a big company. Mm-hmm. So we've sort of set up the system a little bit. So I like the idea of humanizing it so that people in a way know. So maybe yeah. you guys can go back and write a book.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to do the grocers of New York, but then also include stories of producers and the products.
Yeah.
Because I think, I mean, to your point, people sometimes don't understand why a high quality product does cost more. And I always say, you know, like it's not expensive, or there's a difference right. between expensive and overpriced.
Right.
Yeah.
And sort of getting people to understand why it's important to pay for quality and why it's important to pay for good ingredients.
Right.
I mean, super, super important. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that's why like at Fresh Direct, we do a lot of like producer stories where, you know, we highlight right. who these producers are, what right. this, what the product really means to them, what the process is, mm-hmm. and like how it gets to you as a customer.
That's why you guys have such a great platform. You know, the thing about being able to look at a computer screen and read that as opposed to having to run into the grocery store mm-hmm. and just grab something. You know, yeah. you can see like a little sign with like a farmer's face on it or something like that. But really being able to tell the story yeah. is an opportunity yeah. you guys have, you know.
Yeah, which is another, to our earlier conversation about social media, that's another kind of important aspect of social media, because it is great that you can, you know, read the story on your screen, but it also is a challenge for an e-commerce retailer to not be able to provide that sort of experiential shopping right. or like immersive shopping experience yeah, sure. that you would get in a store. So, you know, social media is just another channel that we have to do some of the storytelling
right.
that we may not have the opportunity to do on the site. And
how do you yeah. see people yeah. food shopping in 5 years? Same as they are now? Or shopping in general? Will they get some stuff just from Amazon and other stuff from you guys and go to the, you know, grocery store occasionally? Or?
I mean, I don't think Amazon's going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah. Oh, I heard they weren't. No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they'll, consumers will still shop online, obviously, and hopefully they do, because that's how we that's how right. we have a job.
Right.
But I also think that because of the consumer's awareness and education on what food, like what's going into their bodies and what they're bringing into their home, I think we're going to see a lot more of like smaller farmer markets become mm-hmm. more accessible in urban areas.
Hope so.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's the expectation.
Right.
I hope so as a human being. and I think that obviously, you know, these online shoppings, marketplaces aren't going anywhere. But I think that we're going to see retailers such as us, like really shift and make sure that we are catering to the customer and for giving them the brands and the products that make them feel good and that they want to bring right. into their home.
Right.
Yeah, totally. I think I was going to say a similar thing. Like, I think customers are just becoming more and more savvy about ingredients and quality again. I mean, people are just getting busier and busier too. Right. So I think convenience, being able to, you know, provide solutions for customers is going right. to be even more important.
That's our whole MO.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we, you know, I think as a cooking school, mm-hmm. our, you know, we kind of looked at ourselves and we're like, how many people, if our goal is really to teach the world to cook,
mm-hmm.
because it makes the world a better place, which is just hands down the goal. Mm-hmm. How many people can we actually teach to cook when you get 12 to 14 people a night mm-hmm. in these seats, or, you know, through the cookbook, or, you know, actually this sauce teaches people how to cook kind of inadvertently, because, yeah. you know, now you can focus on like, how's the best way to roast my broccoli before I put the romesco on it.
And it also, you know? Like, I think products like your sauces, they help the customer get one step ahead of
right.
of brainstorming on what to make tonight, yep. you know, and
which is stressful.
Yeah, recently, you know, we put together this awesome, like what we call like a picks list, or like mm-hmm. a homepage list of like easy weeknight dinners that right. we put together, and you guys were featured on it. And, you know, we gave a couple of options for meat mm-hmm. and a sauce and what are a couple of little ingredients. And then right above it, it was a couple of sentences on, you know, how to make,
right.
you know, this awesome, I don't know, grilled steak. And like customers went crazy
That's
over
awesome.
That.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you yeah. guys, you went out of stock, which I know it's like, quote unquote, a good problem to have, but no.
It's
so stressful. But it means that right. customers are really responding
yeah.
well to that sort of content and right. inspiration, and being able to provide just a little bit less effort on their end to think about, mm-hmm. oh, right. shit, what do I make tonight?
Right.
You know, I don't want to order out again.
Right.
How do you bring that inspiration top of mind and make it easy for them?
Yeah, and what we're hoping is that people don't just decide only to get private label everything, you know, that like there's still a place for like a brand that you love and you feel connected to. You know, they're going to mm-hmm. be less expensive chimichurris in the world. There already are. And there are going to be more and more grocers that are going to be making their own stuff. And we know that. But what we're hoping is that there's a connection, you know, to something
yeah.
like there's always going to be the no-name brand. And then there's always going to be, we're hoping, and there will be a flushing, I'm sure, of some overpriced nonsense things in the world. But we're hoping to sort of withstand that. Last question. Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think there will always be room for brands. I mean, food is such an emotional thing. And I think people connect to something that they really trust. And so if you can build a brand that people trust, there's always space for that.
Yeah.
Agreed.
All right. Well, I think on that note, that's actually the best way to end, because building a brand that people can trust is sort of the goal. So I want to thank you guys both so much for coming on the show. It went really quick, didn't
yeah,
it?
Thank
yeah,
you
it
for having
yeah.
me.
Yes,
no.
Thank you.
And I'm excited to see you at the Fancy Food Show.
Yes,
in a week.
Yes. Yahoo. We're so excited. Yeah.
Thank you, David, for being our engineer. As always, you're the best engineer ever. And we'll see you next time on In the Sauce. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.